Thank you. I'm in the fortunate position of talking on the Thursday because several people have actually already introduced several of the things I need to talk about, like non-coding DNA and gene expression data. So, and in fact, just now, with Rasmus talking about the HapMap and allele frequencies, I'm going to cover some of that as well. So firstly, I'm going to try and outline what I'm going to talk about. She's based on the hypothesis that conserved non-coding DNA does actually have a function in the human genome. And what I'm going to try and demonstrate is how we use variation data to address this, as to whether it's true, and to try and tease out what some of this function may be. So does human variation data actually suggest selection is acting on non-coding DNA? And my first question is, are conserved non-coding sequences actually selectively constrained? And then I'm going to describe a subset of conserved non-coding regions that are fast evolving, how we detected them, why we're interested in them, and then some of the properties that we've seen since we found them. So I'm not going to labor long on this as it's been covered, but so the human genome, there is a good 5% that's conserved, but it isn't all coding. In fact, there's twice as much outside of exons that is being conserved. So is the remaining junk? As someone who worked on finishing the human sequence, you're certainly difficult to motivate yourself to get up every day if you think almost 100% of everything you do would be junk. So I've actually been one of those people who's convinced that there must be something in there that was worth doing all that time. So anyway, moving on. So it's been shown by comparison with mouse already that this is a plot of the density of conservation scores in the genome. And although you have neutral, you also have constrained sequence and portion of it. We now have sequence for many other organisms, and a paper by Elliot Margulis et al. Recently was describing adding the addition of platypus and opossum. And this is actually data taken from almost 600 kb region that they looked at. And they actually call them multiple vertebrate sequences. So this could be coding or non-coding, but these are specifically the non-coding parts of that. And half of them are being seen as conserved across all the mammals. But what it does demonstrate is that you do get fractions that are conserved in humans and are lineage-specific in other species. So one species doesn't tell you about all the rest. Okay. So what about where they are? CNCs seem to be fairly evenly distributed in the human genome. This is a plot of the distribution of exons and conserved non-coding, and this is chromosome 22 and chromosome 9. If you look at the comparison of the density between CNCs and exons, there is a slight negative correlation of the two. This line is just indicatory. So hopefully I've started to convince you we should be interested in these regions. There is abundance way more than expected under neutral evolution. If the function is actually gene regulation, then our understanding of this is currently quite limited. A small fraction of the CNCs, the ultra-conserved elements, have been shown to be enhancers important for early developmental genes. But the vast majority, the function still remains unknown. Gene regulation is also considered a crucial contributor to evolutionary change, and King and Wilson hypothesized that the phenotypic differences between human and chimpanzees is driven mainly by changes in gene regulation rather than in protein coding. Excuse me. So conserved non-coding regions may well harbour the critical regions for regulatory change that have driven recent human evolution. So next, I'm going to describe the conserved non-coding regions that I've been using. They come from a set defined by Siepel et al. Using a phylogenetic hidden Markov model, and we're using the top 5% conserved for the human genome. And this is just going to go briefly through how they did this, which is based on best in genome pairwise alignments of different organisms. At the moment, these are the organisms that they used to make this track. And this is the track that's available on the UCSC Genome Browser. Once they've got these pairwise alignments, they then chain these in to make larger blocks and then make multiple alignments out of pairwise alignments. And once having that multiple alignment, they then use FASTCONS to construct this two-state HMM for a conserved and non-conserved state. And in doing that, they add a log score of how conserved they consider a block to be. So in order to look at them as non-coding elements, we also then take an overlap with gene annotation. In our case, we use the ensemble gene annotation to make it a non-coding set. So one of the questions we need to ask is, before we continue looking at conserved non-coding regions, is are they actually actively, selectively constrained in the genome? Conservation is happening due to forces acting. We look first at the SNP density, and we found the SNP density is actually a lot lower in conserved non-coding than non-coding, non-conserved sequence. Tongue twister. But this could be due to low local mutation rates, or it could also be because if a new allele is deleterious, it's less likely to be fixed within the population. So we've addressed this question by looking at the derived allele frequency spectra, as it should be unaffected by local mutation rates. This is in our paper, Drake et al. So more about derived allele frequency. Selective constraint shifts the distribution of constrained alleles towards rare frequencies, as you saw earlier. And the data that I'm using are allele frequencies from the four populations from the HapMap using the unrelated individuals. So we have four populations. And we have derived allele frequencies generated for first the 1 million for the phase one of the HapMap. And we've also then got this also for the 4 million SNPs that are now in the phase two. So the derived allele is the new allele. So we define that by the ancestral allele, which is inferred by comparison to chimp and or macaque. The SNPs we then assign to different types of genomic features. So the first thing I'm going to show here is where we've had the SNPs that fall in conserved or non-conserved regions. So the conserved are red and the non-conserved are black. Hopefully it's quite obvious that you see a shift in the frequency spectrum to the left, implying that there's selective constraint in the conserved region against the non-conserved. And we test the distributions of these using the Mann-Whitney U-test. You can extend this further, and we looked at this again using the phase two data, this time mapping to conserved non-coding, which are in red, exons that are here in blue, introns in green, and the remaining SNPs. So the remaining SNPs compared against the CNCs are actually the most extremely constrained, which was a surprise for me.
Excuse me, are you HapMap genotypes or are you sequencing?
Yes, HapMap genotypes. Sorry, thank you. And it tests as being very significant against the introns. So we demonstrated that CNCs are selectively constrained and not just mutation cold spots. The nucleotide variation reveals selective constraint in human populations. The ones I've just shown you are for the Yoruba population, but if you repeat that for any of the other populations.
Sorry. Density? Is that HapMap or sequencing?
HapMap. All HapMap. The HapMap okay. SNPs. Density of HapMap SNPs.
Okay. I have no idea if that's biological.
Let me go back slightly then. The fact that you get a strong selective constraint is a reduction. You see that new alleles are repressed in the population, so they don't rise to higher frequencies. They're kept at low frequencies because a change would be deleterious. So there'd be pressure, you would see that as slightly as less SNPs, but also more of the lower frequency SNPs. Okay. So we have an excess of low-frequency SNPs. So we can say that CNCs are subject to purifying selection in humans and are likely to harbour functional variants. So it's worth considering continuing to look to see what is in these elements. But why are they conserved? Regions of the genome are being constrained, but for what reason? What's novel about their biology? And how can we tackle this question for so many elements? If you look at the ones that are more than 100 bases in size, this is 300,000 elements. So which would be the most interesting regions? The ones we've selected are a subset that are undergoing rapid change and would then potentially have common properties or roles. So why fast-evolving non-coding? If CNCs are part of the human-chimp lineage differentiation, then changes in their nucleotide sequence would have to occur despite overall conservation. Following gene duplication, there's a theory by subfunctionalization after duplication that partitioning of regulation between the two copies could be occurring. And an older model proposes that gene duplication having happened, that there would be an important role for positive selection after this. I'm just going to describe a bit more about subfunctionalization. The idea is that if a gene is duplicated, and here being the regulatory regions, that the two copies are being preserved by subfunctionalization by a process of duplication and then degeneration of the regulatory regions between the two copies, potentially being species-specific. If CNCs are regulatory regions involved in this process, then they would also have changed rapidly since duplication. So how did we detect these? We took alignments of the human, chimp, and macaque whole genome sequence and selected the alignments for the conserved non-coding regions. And then we've identified the bases that are lineage-specific and counted them. Hopefully you can see that the red ones are specific. Then what we do is we consider where these are. So we're taking a Tajima's relative rate test here. We take the substitutions on the human lineage and test them against those on the chimp. We use the macaque here in the step previous for counting of the substitutions. So if we say a change is human-specific, it has to be a change that isn't present in chimp and macaque. Okay. So this is a chi-square based test. So the number of elements we get, we started with more than 300,000 alignments of human conserved non-coding sequence. We have the power to detect acceleration, that it is that we need at least 4 lineage-specific substitutions in order to have power to detect its significance. So we now have just under 26,500. And we then detect at the 0.5 level that just under 3,000 are accelerated. We then separate these, whether they're accelerated on the chimp or the human lineage. And we call these regions ANCs for accelerated non-coding regions. So are these regions functional? Before we can address this question, we need some measure of control to test the properties of the regions. So we've done this by using 3 sets of controls. One is the remaining power CNCs that have changed, but they're not lineage specific. And the non-accelerated CNCs, so conserved non-coding, and there's no detection of acceleration. We also used a control region of taking 20 megabase windows and going 500 kb away from our ANCs. The theory of these controls is they should contain sequence that will be predominantly neutral, although we haven't set any criteria that it should be coding or non-coding. It's just random. And we also repeat our analyses, excluding any potential confounders. So we chose to include elements that overlap duplications, copy number variants, pseudogenes or retroposed genes, because these elements could be of interest and it would be unfortunate to exclude them at this early stage. And there have been three papers in the last year that have described families of elements that are repetitive, conserved non-coding. So what I'm going to talk about next is the test that we've done on the function of these regions. So does nucleotide variation data indicate any particular modes of selection for these regions? We've detected that they've changed between human and chimp, but is this acceleration recent or ancient? If the change is recent, then we should be able to detect it using the derived allele frequency spectrum that I described earlier, and also a population differential measure of FST. And I also want to ask if ANCs are involved in subfunctionalization. Do we have an enrichment for these regions in duplications or not? And what function do these rapidly evolving sequences have? And here I'm going to apply comparisons with the association data that Manolis was talking about on Tuesday. So, firstly, if we look at the derived allele frequency. If you concentrate first on the red and the blue is the control, which is predominantly neutral. The red are the non-accelerated CNCs, so you've seen that the CNCs are selectively constrained already. But if we compare this to the yellow, to the ANCs, then we can see that there is actually, they come from this set, so they appear to have lost the constraint and potentially having directional selection. So this is the low allele frequency, these are high allele frequency, so these would be things rising towards fixation in the population. And if we look at against our control, so against the power control, these are the ones that had change, but it wasn't lineage specific, then they actually appear to model mostly the neutral control. If we take out all those confounding elements I was talking about, then actually the shift is still there. It doesn't test as different from the whole ANC set. So we've seen that they do seem to, there are selection pressures happening. So if we then move on to look at population substructure. So could ANCs be responsible for differentiation between populations? This is done using FST, of using, which is where you treat two diverged subpopulations as if it belongs to a larger population, and it's a test of the variance between and within the populations. What we see when we do this is that ANC FST values are actually higher than those of the non-accelerated. So this is the same colours I had before. The power are purple, the non-accelerated ones are red, and the ANCs are in yellow. What we found was that it is marginally significant, the difference between the non-accelerated and the ANCs. But if we then exclude the confounders, then it becomes significant. So from this, we can say that it does appear that even in recent human populations, ANCs could be responsible for some of that differentiation between populations. So segmental duplications. Approximately 5 to 6% of the human genome is in segmental duplications. These are defined by Evan Eichler's group. And we looked for an overlap between the ANCs. We get 8%. The power CNC is 10%, so slightly higher. But this is lower than the non-accelerated, which is more like the expected genome average. So we have got an enrichment for them in segmental duplications. The general enrichment is not that surprising because it's been observed that there is sequence divergence occurring within duplicated sequences. But what about in more recent segmental duplications? So to get an idea of whether this relates to them being a recent event, we looked against the percentage identity of the segmental duplications. So in theory, those that are of a higher identity between the copies are the most recently occurring duplications. If you look at the non-accelerated and the power CNCs, then they're distributed across and you see them at most levels of identity. However, the ANCs do show an enrichment in the most recent segmental duplications. And actually, these are where the human-specific duplications would fall. across this span, duplication could be present in human and in chimp, but these are where the most of the human-specific ones would fall. So we have got an enrichment for our accelerated regions in these recent duplications. So what we would like to know, everybody wants to know what these things actually do. Do they have a function? And so what we've done to try and test for evidence of this is to look for an involvement in gene regulation, gene expression. So just the theory being that NA and C is acting in some way involved on it with a gene and its expression. We know we can look at SNPs inside A and Cs, and we can also measure the messenger RNA levels from genes. So can we see the association between the two? So this is a slide hopefully some will recognize from Tuesday from Manolis' talk. What we've done is they're using nearly 42,000 transcripts in lymphoblastoid cell lines for the unrelated HapMap individuals that I mentioned earlier. And we look for an association of SNP genotypes with ANCs to the transcription expression levels and test it by linear regression. Because there's a multiple testing problem with this, because of the numbers that we're dealing with, we also do permutations of the data to get to adjust the statistical significance. So we've done 10,000 permutations per gene for this. So to look for association with the ANCs, we looked for any SNPs within a 10 megabase window from a gene. And we also tested the power CNCs, so all the SNPs within the power CNCs for association as well. So what did we find? At the 10 to the minus 2 permutation threshold, we find that we get 68% of ANCs of the ones that are tested. So the SNPs within these ANCs are associated with some change in gene expression. And only 9% of the SNPs within the power CNCs. So a SNP within an ANC is 7 times more likely to be associated with a gene expression level change than a SNP within a power CNC. The problem with this is that you can get multiple SNPs within the same ANC. So what happens if we look at associations with ANCs to gene expression? So we found that 16% of the ANCs that we could test, so this would be ANCs that actually have a SNP in them in the first place, show a significant gene expression association, and only 3% of the power CNCs. So what we have seen is nucleotide variation within an ANC is five times more likely to be associated with a gene expression change than a variation in a power CNC. One of the things that I then also looked at, as we have the derived allele frequency information, was to see if there's any link between whether you've got a derived allele and a change in the expression level. Does it make it go, is it higher or lower? Because we don't have a very large set, we can't really claim statistical significance for it, but there is a tendency for the derived allele to be associated with lower expression levels, which is interesting because I guess some people would think that if you have something being selected as being advantageous, would it be because you'd have higher expression levels? Although there have been papers, particularly there was an example describing in caspase 12 that actually gene loss can also be adaptive. Okay. So what I've tried to show you in summary of the work is that CNCs are not just cold spots, but are actually being selectively constrained within the genome. And that if you look at fast-evolving non-coding sequences in the human lineage, then they appear to have lost the constraint of the group as a whole, and some are potentially undergoing positive selection. This may have contributed to some of the recent differentiation in populations, as we saw with the SST values, and that ANCs are enriched within the most recent segmental duplications. And finally, the SNPs in ANCs are associated with significant change in gene expression. phenotypes, though, with looking into what they do more clearly. I'd just like to do some acknowledgements to my joint supervisors, Manolis Demijakis and Matt Hurls, and to the members of their team, particularly to Barbara for her help with the expression data, and to my other authors, as we have a paper on this data, to Webb Miller, who is responsible for the alignments of the three genomes, and Dale Thomas, who calculated all the derived allele frequencies for those 4 million MAP SNPs. And I'd like to thank the macaque consortium for actually allowing us access to the genome data, which without that, the fast evolving data wouldn't be possible, and the HapMap consortium. And for me, for funding from the Wellcome Trust and the MRC. Thank you.